Welcome back to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. It is good to have you all on board with us as we get ready to talk about health matters. And I'm telling you, we have a great guest to help us with that topic today, Dr. Donna Adams Pickett, a very, very impressive lady. Dr. Pickett, it is so good to see you again. How have you been?
I've been great. Thank you for having me today.
My pleasure. You know, you and I met some years ago. I think it was about 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. This is my first time seeing you since then. But, you know, I still remember how impressive you are as a person, how impressive your practice is. I'm just so amazed. If you would, please, I let them know your name. But if you would, for the benefit of many in my listening community who did not get a chance to hear us talk when we spoke years ago. Mm-hmm. If you would tell us more about Dr. Donna Adams Pickett. Let us know a little bit about what life was like for you as a little girl growing up.
Wow. Okay.
Take us on into your academic background, and please tell us as you hit that back academic background, both of those doctoral degrees.
Well, thank you again for having me today. I had a very interesting and background. I am the youngest of 10 children. My parents grew up on a tobacco farm in Greenville, North Carolina. Grew up as working in sharecropping families and moved to Portsmouth, Virginia. So my father had little more than a sixth grade education. My mother about the same. And they had the 10 children. Seven of us went to college.
Awesome.
And so I'm very proud of that. And after I finished my high school career in Portsmouth, Virginia, I went on to Howard University, the Mecca, as we call it, in Washington, D.C., completed a bachelor's degree in microbiology, and found my way to Augusta, Georgia. Was here for graduate school and really enjoyed my experience here. And here in Augusta, I received a PhD in microbiology and immunology. I was the first African-American female to receive a PhD in microbiology and immunology.
Awesome.
At MCG, because that's what they called it then.
Yeah, making history.
And was very honored to win a competitive American Society of Microbiology fellowship at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. After my 2 years of doing that, I knew even before going into graduate school that I wanted to do more clinical research. And I had the benefit of working with a number of MDs at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. So they encouraged me to further my career, and I applied to medical school at Emory School of Medicine, completed my career there, and came on to Augusta, back home to Augusta. It had become my second home, where I completed my residency in obstetrics and gynecology at MCG. And after 3 years as a staff physician and interim chair of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Eisenhower Army Medical Center, I decided that I wanted to provide something a little different to the community. And that is when I opened my own practice, Augusta Women's Health and Wellness Center. And we've been in practice now since 2008. So this year will be 11 years.
Yes.
We have grown. We still love our patients there. It's still just me. I'm still the only physician there, and I wouldn't have it any other way. We absolutely, we consider it a family environment, and that's what we're trying to move into the next 11 years doing the same.
I love that. So, and you said that you wanted to do something different. What makes it different? What makes it distinctive?
Well, our motto for our practices is that we care for you, mind, body, and soul. And so when you come into our practice, we have decorated it to create an ambiance of relaxation. We try to have a spa-like environment. And so no paper gowns for us. We have cloth bathrobes and foot coverings and soft music and soft lighting. But more importantly, I always tell my patients that I want your office visit to feel like a visit between two friends. And so I like to sit down with my patients and ask them about their children, ask them about their lives, ask them more than what their physical complaint is, because everybody wants to be heard.
Yes.
And I find for women, for moms and daughters and sisters, that they often are not heard by those that are around them. So I like to try to provide an environment where they feel that they can be as vulnerable as possible, physically and emotionally.
Mm, yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
So for you, it's first and foremost about relationship.
Absolutely. It is solely and completely about relationships. We have 7 exam rooms in our practice, and each exam room has a different vibe per se. When you walk out of the room, you see the number on the exam room, and on top of the number is a name. And the names are of the important women in my life. Mm. So I have an exam room for each of my 4 sisters, my daughter, my mother-in-law, my childhood best friend, and my mother. And the purpose of that is really for me to remind me that even on the most hectic, busy day, that when I walk in that room, I want to treat this patient the same way I would want someone to treat my sister.
Wow.
Or my daughter or my mother.
I got you. Wow. What an awesome way to do that, too.
Yes.
Because you have that constant reminder.
Yes.
Right in front of
you. Right in front of me. If I see Ella, that's my mother, I better walk in that room and make Ella proud.
I like that. And I'm trying to remember, you mentioned a spa-like environment. Mm-hmm. Do you have a massage room in the practice?
We did have a massage room at one time. We found that it was not well utilized. So what we have instead, we have recliners in each of our rooms, because who amongst us has not had to wait a bit at a doctor's office?
Yes.
So I feel like, well, you have your recliner. We have cable TV in each room, but usually we'll keep it on the soundscapes. Now, sometimes patients, I'll walk in and they've turned it to R&B, hip hop, or gospel, but that's okay. Again, we provide soft, fuzzy socks for the visit, and we usually provide snacks for our patients. So even if they have to wait, I have a few patients who I've come in to visit them and they'll say, "Not yet, doc, go see someone else." I want to relax a little bit longer.
So it's working.
It's working. It's working.
Well, you know, I I'm so impressed with what you all are doing there. I think it's awesome. I mean, you see, it's been somewhere in the neighborhood of 6-7 years. Mm-hmm. That I visited.
Yes.
And I remembered you had a massage room. And
yes.
That's just how impressive. I mean, you really made an impression
on
me.
Wow. Thank you so much.
You're one of the things you were sharing with me is that in the course of working with your friends who come through, just calling your friends, your family, you're working with people from a very, very wide age range.
Yes. Yes. I have always liked to say, I see you at each end of life. So, of course, I deliver the babies, but I have a number of patients that I start seeing them at 10 and 11 years old, right before they have their first period. And then my oldest patient, as I share with you, she's 93 years old, and she is just a delight. I love her. I really do spend visits just holding her hand, giving her a little kiss on the cheek. And that's, I guess I have to take care of you now. But she is just lights up my heart. And I love that. I really feel that we have become family. So I share with someone that I walked the Miracle Mile Walk last October for breast cancer research with University Hospital. And about every 3 feet, I would stop and see one of my patients or one of my babies. Mm. And I was stopping to have a little conversation. And my friend who was walking with me finally said, "I can't walk with you anymore. We'll never get through the smiles." And she left me.
So she left me. And you crossed the finish line with a day later?
Well, a few hours later. It was quite sparse out there.
That's great, though. And so you mentioned that one of the things that's happening is with the age range of the people you're working with, you're seeing them at the time of their first period.
Yes.
And I would like to use that as a segue into the rest of our conversation, because one of the things that you've done, ladies and gentlemen, you heard Dr. Pickett Adams, Dr. Adams Pickett mention OBGYN.
Yes.
But you have a couple of books.
Yes.
That address both genders.
Yes, I do. So in 2014 and 2015, I authored two books. One is Big Sis's Guide to Growing Up, and the other is Buddy's Big Guy Guidebook, both available on Amazon. And they are puberty primers. They are heavily illustrated books to help little African-American boys and girls enter and travel the pathway to puberty. I have found that it can be a very overwhelming subject, and that there are a number of cultural barriers in place that prevent us from speaking freely to our children about this subject. So I created those books in an effort to break down those barriers and make it a much easier conversation for our parents and our children.
I got to tell you, I appreciate you for having written a book for both genders.
Yes.
Because with you being OBGYN, it could easily have been just one book just for girls.
Right.
But you realize it's important to help the boys through this as well.
Absolutely. I have found that for sometimes the barrier is even greater, particularly with those moms who are raising their boys. With the mom with a girl, she knows what she's gone through, and it's easier for her to broach the subject. It can be a sticky subject for everyone. But when a mom has a little boy and that little boy feels like he still needs to be a little man, it's hard to break through that barrier. And so I found that I wanted to have a way to open up the conversation with my son. And I have to say, and even though my son is now 12, I wrote the book when he was younger. We still, now, if he has questions, he'll go get his book and say, now, I have a question about this now because I'm experiencing this now. Hmm. And he'll come talk to me and not his dad. So I'm glad that he has that resource.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. By way of laying the foundation for us, mm-hmm. for the rest of what we're going to talk about with regards to puberty, mm-hmm. if you could discuss two things with us. Number one, what actually is puberty? And secondly, related to that, what is the purpose of puberty?
Well, it is the transition of our bodies so that we can ultimately reproduce. You know, the whole purpose of our being is to go forth and multiply. But we don't have the ability to reproduce when we are first born. So it is the maturity, the growth and development of the body so that ultimately we can go on to reproduce and to keep our generations going forward. It's important that we know about it because the changes are pretty dramatic. When we think about, I have an 18-year-old daughter, and there are times I look at the pictures of her when she was a little baby. Of course, she looks nothing like that now. And so it is important that we prepare for that and we prepare them for that.
And so when children are going through puberty, whether the girl or the boy, mm-hmm. there's more, and we see sometimes some attitude, what seem to be attitudinal changes taking place. That's not really what's at the heart of what's going on. You know, is this about hormones and other chemicals?
It really is about the hormones. I think some of the changes in attitudes or personalities that we see is that they're having difficulty coping with the changes as well. We think it's hard for us to look at. It's hard for them to experience. All of a sudden, they look different. They start having feelings and parts of their body that they didn't have before. Because culturally, we as a race tend to be uncomfortable with puberty, they start noticing that people are treating them differently. You know, daddy won't hug me as tightly anymore. Now, you know, people are still, oh, she's looking grown in that skirt. So they have a difficult time adjusting to all of the changes externally as well as internally. And I think that if we were more in tune to it, more sympathetic and more celebratory, I think we really need to celebrate the changes that it will be easier for them to transition into.
So what are some of the physical changes that the girls experience?
Well, the boys and the girls both follow a particular trajectory, that it all usually starts with those changes in the underarms. So we start noticing that they may run past us, and all of a sudden we're like, oh my goodness, you know, have you been clawing rocks or something? And so that's when we start developing what we call our adrenal glands, and we start having the development of the sweat glands. And right after that, we start noticing hair in other parts of the body, other than on the head. So we start noticing the hair on the arms, the legs, between the legs. Shortly after that, usually girls start having breast bud development. And then about 2 years after that, that's when they'll have their period. With the boys, after they start getting the hair growth, they'll start noticing body growth is usually asymmetrical. So all of a sudden they're getting really big hands and big feet, but the torso is small, or the torso is getting really long, and then the legs are short, but they start developing the muscle. And then they start having inadvertent erections that they weren't prepared for. And I think, again, if we can prepare them before it happens, it's not as overwhelming to them.
Because I was going to ask you, I mentioned the girls, and then I was going to ask, okay, now can you tell us what happens with the boys now? So I appreciate you took us there already anyhow. So I appreciate that. What about vocal changes with both?
With the voice changes. So with the girl, she tends to not have, as dramatic of a change in her vocal cords. But with the boys, right around the time that they start getting the hair growth, they'll start noticing some changes in their vocal cords. Again, it's not consistent. One of the illustrations I have in the boy book is that when he opens his mouth, a soul singer comes out of his mouth, as well as a little bird, because at one moment he sounds like Barry White, and the next minute he sounds like Pee Wee. So, but that happens right around the time that they start getting the hair changes. Right after that.
Now, what's happening? You mentioned that with the boys, there are going to be times when they're going to experience erections, and I'm assuming this is happening against their will. It's not something that they're thinking about necessarily, et cetera. So what's going on?
So it's just blood flow. It is. And so that's the one thing we focus on. I feel like we should focus on with the boys, is that you're going to have more blood flowing into that area. And then when there's more blood flowing through there, then there's the penis is erect. And then when it's not, then it's flat. And so we just kind of, you know, explain to them that it's going to happen at times that you're not aware of. You know, I always like to say, I hope my book opens the door for further conversation, so that we can say, okay, and then sometimes it may happen at night when you're asleep, and things may happen when you're asleep. And then we start talking about what we call nocturnal emissions. And but the big thing is to normalize it, to say, but this is normal. This is okay. The analogy that I mentioned earlier was that you explain to your child that one day you're going to look like me. When you were born, it's like you were in a little apartment. As you go through puberty, you're going to have a nice little cottage. But the goal is to get you in a big, beautiful house just like me. And so what I always say is that as you're having that conversation, tell them, so what I'm going to do is help you grow and move into your new house, help you have all the tools and the furniture that you need so that you can be in your new house and that you're comfortable in your new house.
I like that. And you mentioned that with the boys, especially with them, because it can be so obvious, especially if an erection takes place and they're out in the public.
Right.
They don't see it coming. It just happens. And it's hard to hide.
Right.
Well, and I'm assuming that part of that is nature's way of getting that boy ready to reproduce.
Right.
So do the girls experience blood flow to their genital area as well? Is it just harder, you know, you just don't see it as easily?
They do. They also have blood flow to the breasts, so they'll have what we call nipple erection. And again, it is so that they can have those feelings that would want them to reproduce. One of the things I feel that what limits us is that we try to have the talk at one time. Like, we want to sit down and think we're going to get all that they need to know in one conversation. Well, that's what typically overwhelms the parent and the child. My feeling is that you should start having the talk every time you're walking through a lingerie department. Oh, look at those bras. One day you're going to be in one that size. Let's go over here and look at all the different sizes. Walking through the sports department, let's go ahead and look at all the different types of a cod piece or a jock strap, because as you get older and you're out there running around, you may have an erection and you may not want everybody to see that. Mm-hmm. You may get more blood flow down there. So let's get you some protective underwear. Again, normalizing it so that we don't want our children ashamed of their ears. So we don't want them to be ashamed of their reproductive parts either.
So where do they find the types of clothes that you mentioned, jock straps, et cetera, that would help hide an erection if it were to?
Just walking through a sports store. You can go into, I was about to say Busy Body, but I'm not in Atlanta, but Dick's Sporting Goods or, the athletic store, American Athletics. Just walking through, because you'll see that there are protective pieces there. A lot of times, we'll have our little boys who haven't been experiencing that much. And they're say they're playing soccer or football, and we try to get them to wear their protective piece. And they're like, I don't need that. And one says, okay, you get kicked down there one time, and you're good. That's it. That's all it takes. And as one of the illustrations in our book is that a young man is doing karate practice, and he accidentally gets kicked there, and that's when he learns where his testicles are.
It would have been nice if he had known sooner, huh?
Absolutely.
When we come back, could you share with us also the timing? I'd like for us to, you've already touched on this, but if we could look a little bit more at when is a good time to say, hey, this is part of that equation.
Right. Okay.
All right, everybody, stay with us. Our guest, yours and mine, Dr. Donna Adams-Pickett. She and I'll be right back for more Health Matters as we look into puberty.